who's going to tee that up?
I'll kick off again. We're actually 10 minutes ahead of schedule.
Hey, well. You're on the roll there, Matt.
Slow it up. I won't slow it up. Okay, so, I mean, completeness and coherence is the first part that we cover in slide deck 4 on principles. I suppose, again, start with the observation that we're beginning from a position where we've got no explicit guidance. We see some evidence of gaps in terms of management commentary reporting. Some of that was discussed with the board. The CFA Institute report that we reference highlights inadequate reporting influencing the extent to which investors are able to use potentially relevant measures and also views from preparers. So we looked at a number of options to address completeness. We can see from sustainability reporting in particular the use of a slightly more checklist-based approach. We feel that would take us away from the principles-based approach of the management commentary and potentially take us away from what is strategically relevant to the prospects of the entity. Mm-hmm. So some concerns with that. We've seen some guidance provided by others written in terms of meeting user needs, and that's something that we feel we cover already in terms of how we've approached objectives. We've also highlighted the standard in Germany picks up on preparers' consideration of the information they use for their internal decision making, and that would be an indicator that something is potentially belongs in the management commentary. And we will also come up, and probably we'll cover this more in terms of comparability, but if a measure is common across an industry, then the entity might need to consider whether it is also appropriate for its management commentary. Rather like materiality, we have a sort of three-pronged approach to addressing some of the challenges here. The first is to make completeness and comprehensiveness explicit as a principle. The second is this concept which variously you will hear the term linkage, narrative coherence and connectivity. That's probably an indication we haven't quite worked out what we should call it. The second element is this idea of narrative coherence. And then the third is we see some specific considerations that are relevant to thinking about the completeness of the management commentary. And we list those out on slide 11. So that picks up on internal information, an idea copied from Germany. It picks up on consideration of the external factors affecting the business, including views obtained from stakeholders during the course of the business. So that's not asking the entity to go out and obtain additional stakeholder views, stakeholders in the sense of customers, suppliers, etc. Not asking the business to go out and obtain additional stakeholder views for the purpose of the management commentary, but if during the course of business it is hearing particular concerns or opportunities with its stakeholders, then that would be something that's potentially relevant to cover in the management commentary. And then thirdly, in relation to the specific considerations, we can observe that investor presentations, strategy day presentations, whatever they're called, tend to be much richer in terms of information content. And I suppose one can start from the position of saying, well, if this is something that needs to be provided to users outside the management commentary in order to understand the business's future prospects, why is it not in the management commentary? And you could say, well, what's the benefit of bringing information that users already have into the management commentary? Well, it typically you'd expect the management commentary to have a level of reporting diligence around it, which might be more consistent with that of the financial statements. So, this information would be confirmatory of what the entity was providing elsewhere, but we still think there's value in supporting the completeness of information through that lens. The harder concept to explain is the narrative coherence idea. If I take you to slide 9, we sort of walk through an example of how this linkage process could work. And really, it starts by asking the entity to consider what's important to the future of the business. And actually, that was the concept we were trying to get across in the materiality definition. And then from there to think, what's the strategy for managing that? We have an example in there in terms of widgets. You might have an entity, it's got an established revenue base, an established market. It's explained what it does in its business model. But it also needs to recognise that it's operating in a maturing market and it's exposed over time to increasing low-cost competition offerings. So the identification of that as a feature of the business model and the external trends then, through the idea of linkage, then leads one to think, well, we have an issue here that is important to the future of the business, so we need to describe our strategy in managing that issue. Not what we will definitely do, but how we are currently as a management team approaching that particular challenge or opportunity. And then having set out the strategy, that then gives you a basis to say, well, if as a management team we're saying it's important that we transition our customer base to blue widgets to get the value from the red widget customer base, then it might be a good idea if the management commentary provides some insight into the progress we've made in making that transition. And again, I observe that typically that insight would need to be at a level which is, to support user decision making, a level which is higher level than would be useful to a competitor, say, because a competitor would be observing these same trends within the market. So there are sort of commercial sensitivity considerations here, but equally there is a user need for information here and a reasonable demand for visible evidence in terms of progress. That might then take you to say, well, users also need to understand the potential implications of our transition to a blue widget world, and there's information that you as a preparer can provide which will allow the user to make their own minds up about what that information is. So we're staying very much in factual information to support a users forming their own view of the prospects, rather than asking management to set out their own view of what the prospects are. And in the illustration here, we're saying, well, you might disclose the fact that blue widgets typically command a premium price, so we have a sort of higher revenue multiple on them. And you might talk about the progress of the business in terms of where it currently is in terms of sales mix to where it thinks it it might potentially get to, so that users can then form a view, well, what does that mean in terms of ongoing earnings capability of the business? And then you'll see on the diagram on page 9 an arrow coming back from that, which is just reflecting the idea that then, having described your performance and how you've done during the year, your discussion of what's important to the future business needs to pick up on the features that were important to the business during the course of the current year, and you need to explain how you're addressing those trends, how you're addressing those opportunities. So we're trying to build a thought process that works across the different content elements of the report to weave together that this consistent narrative story that takes the same issue, whether it is in terms of business model, whether it is in terms of strategy, whether in terms of operational KPIs, and tells the story of that issue across the report. And, you know, I go back to the observation I made with materiality, that we feel that is likely to be 5 or 6 big issues that are told across the report rather than 20 or 30 big issues. So what does that mean in practice? On slide 8, I've just provided a few illustrations of how this thought process might work. So the first one is an entity's identified loss of reputation for quality as a key risk to its customer base. So that might lead it to conclude, well, we can provide insight in the management commentary by providing trend information on the overall level of product failure rates. Not necessarily absolute numbers, but trend numbers perhaps would be the important indicator here. We take another example then. The strategy of a business: an entity identifies that it wants to expand into a particular part of the globe where it's had a relatively small presence so far, so not big in current year financial terms, but the entity would say this is strategically important to us, so the business model needs to describe the key features of that market. And for example, if we're addressing that market through a reseller channel, then that's important information about the business model that a user needs to know to distinguish it from the overall business model and approach of the entity. We look again at business model in terms of an entity identifying its R&D capability as a key competitive advantage. That might lead the entity to explain how it's managing its R&D staff retention, might lead it to give specific indicators around the trend for overall staff retention, so a user can see that it's not suddenly losing a lot of key staff. And you know, with an issue like that, potentially you're looking at disclosures of human capital that address a question in terms of intellectual capital. So it's again this idea that the linkage can work across the content elements and across the different subject matter areas. And then the last example on page 8 is just looking at a trend emerging in terms of financial performance. So perhaps it appears in the review of current year financial performance. Well, it would be logical for the management commentary then to pick up on the strategy for addressing that trend, whether it's a positive trend or a negative trend, and build on that in terms of where the business is going in terms of its sort of operational strategy. So, again, we have an approach that combines this sort of conceptual idea of narrative coherence with some practical challenges around, or practical considerations around, what would indicators be for a preparer in terms of have we missed something out from the management commentary, and we're seeking to sort of package that up in a way that would sort of welcome observations, both in terms of whether we've covered off the right issues, whether the sort of narrative coherence gives the right approach to storytelling, and whether these practical considerations are the right practical considerations. So again, I think open it up to questions and comments at that point.
Jeff.
I think it's very important at the end of the day, management commentary is all around communicating exactly these issues, and I think you've gone about it in a pretty sensible way to illustrate it. I guess one question I had on page 8, which is the reason I put up my card as soon as you were talking about it, is can financial performance ever be a trigger that means that you talk about it? Because an entity reports declining revenues in a segment, but the question is it seeing lower volumes, lower price? Is there a new competitor coming in? All of those things are actually business related. They're either business model strategy or other factors. The financial performance is always an output of an issue. Mm. So I'm not sure I'd ever trigger. I mean, that may be something that you'd, maybe a level of materiality that you say something's going on in this division, we've got to get back to the root cause of it, and then we'll talk about it. But it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be the trigger event.
So I think it's saying that the financial performance is indicative of an underlying operational issue, which then causes you to come back to talking about the strategy. So it's not saying financial performance in its own right might trigger a strategy discussion. That makes sense.
Larissa.
You made a very interesting comment about trend, and I do wonder how we marry that with conciseness, because if you're only going to address the 5 or 6 key issues, then you're never going to get a concise over time. So what I would like to suggest as a consideration is that if we are going to limit the focus points in the management discussion, that we extend the 2-year the 1-year comparative requirements to 3 or 5. You cannot build trend on 2 data points. And frankly, if you have a volatile data point, are you laughing or agreeing? I'm not sure.
I'm agreeing. And actually, it's something that we do pick up on in the other matters discussion, that actually comparability sometimes needs to be across more than 2 years.
Yes.
Sometimes needs to be across more than 5 years.
I think if you go beyond 5, people would call us too crazy. I reckon they'll attach that on 5 years as well. I'd like to propose 5, because if you have a volatile data series, you can't get trend out of 3 years.
But I think data points. 5 in the context of if 5 is what you need to be able to observe a trend, then that's the right number. But if it's less, then...
I'd be very cautious, because... I do a lot of long-term trend analysis, and if you ask the company, they always cut it off right before the data point causes the problem.
Lisa.
Just a quick comment on the terminology, and in particular on coherence. I do like the word coherence in the context of communicating, but I'm not sure that it's optimally applied in the slide deck. In common usage, coherent means clear, comprehensible.
Yeah.
And I see coherence or clarity of communication as being the sum total of 3 properties. So one is completeness of information. There shouldn't be gaps. The second would be connected information. So the user can understand how this information relates to each other. I do far prefer connected or connectivity over linked or joined up. And the third property that I think helps to lead to coherence would be that information being presented concisely and using plain language. So that gets back to the point of having a communication principle right at the beginning. So I like the word coherence, but I think that it's being used to describe connectivity, and I don't think that that's right. I think connectivity is one of the ingredients that leads to coherence.
Yeah, I think we need to think about some of the terminology here.
Literally, I think the term means something like connectivity. In practice, it is used as clarity, but literally, coherence means that the connectivity between pieces of information is correct. But anyway, Marek?
thank you. I was interested in that description, actually, so I was still thinking about it as you called on me. The material that you've got here on linkage, if we call it that for the moment, whatever you decide to call it, I think is very helpful. But if I look at your little diagram on page 7, I think it's at risk of confusing materiality and completeness with other things. I wonder if it just makes it too complicated. Completeness applies at the level of the matters and at the level of the information about those matters. That's very clear. But the trigger for what goes in or doesn't in both cases is whether it's rising to that level of having materiality, except in what we said earlier about matters not being able to be described as material. So I think all of that side of it goes into the materiality guidance, and I'm not sure you need to then sort of play it out as part of this. Linkage can help you with completeness and materiality, because the fact that one piece of information naturally flows to expect another piece of information, the consequence of doing something, for example, helps you to see that there is something else that you need to include that may be material, and then you make a decision on it. But I think the whole piece on linkage is very helpful. On page 9, you've got this four-box diagram, but I wonder if you couldn't make that with a bit more thought, a complete story, starting with purpose and going through business model strategy and then down to the application of the business model and strategy through operational decisions and performance at the other end and impacts and all the other things. But if you had that model, I think then you're showing people in general terms what the linkage through this one story is, and then that can help you to get things complete. But I think completeness is different, and therefore it's worth not mixing the two ideas other than to say one can help you with the other. That's where it's coming from.
Chris?
So something actually quite similar. So I looked at this sort of structure and I thought this was a much better structure for how you would set it out, except, again, I would start with purpose and then debating where I put strategy, whether that's before what's important to the future of the business. But I also came back to, I think there's two bits. So there's linkage in terms of this into the financial statements, and I think that's a clearer understanding of the word linkage, that you're actually saying you need to make these two things talk to each other, because if you've got something over here that's important, then whether it's a trigger or whether it's an output, you'd expect some explanation of why that thing's happened. And I think people could get their head around that. But mm-hmm. I think when you're using linkage within the one document, which is basically start at the beginning and follow something through in a logical fashion, I'm not sure that's how I would think of it as being linkage. And so I think you really are just saying tell the whole story about whatever's important. And I think giving an example of that's probably easier than trying to come up with a new terminology or mm-hmm. something else.
So the idea works, but the terminology doesn't.
Yeah, I think that's probably a very good way to do it. And then my last comment is in terms of completeness, I think it's very hard to have a conversation about completeness without thinking about neutrality. So I think it's trying to get people to think about that together, because for me, particularly in something like management commentary, completeness has to be I've told the whole story and I haven't told you just the good bits, I've told you everything. And so I think it's very hard to actually talk about them only separately. I think that to me is also linkage, that those two have to come together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Ben?
Thank you. Some comments, so similar, maybe starting with purpose at the top. I think that comment's been made a few times. I thought I'd just do some comments about how I might actually, as an investor, use this in this idea of coherence and connectivity. And again, I actually thought of coherence more on the connectivity part, but then hearing your way of talking about it, I thought, oh, yeah, some people do think about it in those terms of words. So within the report, I would be looking for what the narrative then says to things like incentives, capital allocation, or purpose. Because if you say something in the narrative and then I look, you've just spent some capital doing this or you've just invested in that, and there's a disconnect, well, that's worth a challenge. And then it might be, well, why is that the case? And if it's because there's something not joined up about the company or the company's thinking, that's very important to me. Or if there is very joined up within that, that's also an important flag. And then that extends throughout the report in things like incentives, capital allocation, R&D, brand, employees, and that. But then it extends out, and this is where actually I think you might come back to timeliness, because I will read the quarterly report. I will read press releases come out. And actually, if you have, depending on your view of materiality, a material event, bang, the next day you'll have a press release statement, something else, which has a lot of this. And I will be checking for, well, how did your statement here then compare to what I've been reading before for an overall view of coherence? Because if suddenly you announce, oh, I'm doing this acquisition, and I go, well, that doesn't relate to what you've said before, mm-hmm. then this is something which goes through, or break down, oh, I see, okay, this is very much in continuance with that. And particularly when you're looking at quarterly calls now, or in fact, any time that companies come up, they have, and if you sort of practically, they have prepared remarks. And those prepared remarks are essentially narrative reporting, although it might not feel done in this, and this is, I think, to an earlier comment, is do some of these principles then apply to what they will say, but they will be prepared, they'll often be read out, and they'll be the starting point before we then get ahead on Q&A. And we very much track how that narrative reporting that, oh, so much so that if they start using, I guess this is like central bank watchers, but start using very subtly, slightly different words, we will take them as signals. Now, it's not towards that extreme, I think, of even within equities investors, but that narrative something is that. And we will have the annual report and that narrative as a check across these things for that coherence or lack of. But I wonder whether there is something with that. And when there is this disconnect or disjointedness, it is something which flags either within report or how it is before. So that connectedness, and then it times in with timeliness, because if then it's all backwards looking or something's happened and it doesn't relate, then, you know, it is that question, and then it doesn't become as useful.
Rodrigo.
So, picking up on something Chris said, and I definitely agree with the way Lisa portrayed it, the idea, like, what Matt said, the idea works, but the terminology should be reviewed. And I believe that the proposal of having completeness, connectivity, and plain language or conciseness under the same umbrella called coherence would be a good way to approach it. And getting to the specifics, I think that, again, with respect to terminology, when you look at A3, you mentioned relationships, you know, meaning that it's quite different from what it's in the objectives. So I think that that's important. With respect to A7, I think that the proposal of including capital markets communication is good, but I would include some soft language at the end to kind of be silent on whether the company should go after or not. I mean, not saying no, but not saying yes. And I'm, as a preparer, quite worried with A8 and A9. I understand the objective, but I would not use the wording irrespective of whether information is provided elsewhere, because this is going to just turn into more duplication of information. Mm-hmm. And I understand the objective here is to stimulate companies to use plain language instead and conciseness. So I would merge A8 and A9 9 into one topic that would specifically address plain language and conciseness, and not using that irrespective of whether the information is already elsewhere.
So just to clarify on the information provided elsewhere, is that a suggestion that the management commentary might not cover a matter if it's covered elsewhere, or might cross-reference to a matter that's covered elsewhere, or is it just a sort of softening of the language that you're thinking of?
No, my concern is with duplication of information, whether it's if it's a different approach or more summarized approach using cross-reference, I'm fine with it, but basically rephrasing the same information that is included somewhere else. I believe it's just like what Larissa said before, it's just adding more pages to the published documents.
Trent?
Two thoughts. One, Matt, you had talked about, I'm going to call them investor presentations. I would be very concerned if there's actually material information in there. In North America, we have this concept of selective disclosure. I'm not sure if that translates or not, but you can't do that. You know, so there really cannot be any material information shared in those types of presentations. So there's nothing to add, nothing to see here. Let's move on, at least from a North American perspective. The second thing I look in here on page 10, talking about a user perspective in the management commentary, one of the things that has happened to us is the SEC took a run at us in terms of segmentation. And segmentation, you know, basically comes out of the reporting regularly done to the chief operating decision maker for the purpose of assessing performance, making resource allocation decisions. And so that should really drive your segmentation should drive your management commentary. And full stop, in my heart. If you have users, if you're trying to be responsive to users and you take away from this story that is consistent with your segmentation, you're just opening yourself up to a world of hurt from the regulators. They're going to come back and say, well, if you're talking about your business this way, and I can't remember if it was Ben that made the comment about they're looking for the consistency of the story across all your documents. If they're saying, look, your management commentary looks at it this way, how come you're not doing your impairment testing under IAS 36 that way? That's what it'll come back to. And I know, speaking personally, we don't want to have that conversation. There's going to be a lot of work, and nobody's going to have any fun out of it.
Let me give you an illustration of
sure.
where we think that might be different. So you may have a... let's say you have a blue widget segment.
Mm-hmm.
Two-thirds of your blue widgets are sold direct to customers. One-third are sold through resellers. Now, you might have a trend or an issue going on with the reseller channel, which is very different to the trends and issues that are going on with the direct sales channel. So within that segment... would you then say at a segment level there's nothing happening, or would you say you need to drill down and talk about the reseller channel because of this particular trend?
I'm trying to think about that theoretically and practically. Practically, you know, how I think about ourselves, whether it's being sold through a own store or a dealer, you know, we track that, but it should not be a market mover. We would not share that.
Mark?
Yeah, the question I had when I was reading this, and I'm not sure what it is, in the right place completeness, I think it is, but there is a potentially a tension sometimes between what is competitively sensitive information and completeness. And I think actually I'm looking at Lisa, but I think in the integrated reporting framework there is some wording around that tension or not. But I thought, are you going to address that and I think you have to maybe discuss, you know.
It is a common feature of narrative reporting frameworks. We did consider some language and then we took it out, so maybe we need to come back to that.
Can
Can I just add to that? It's not just in, sometimes in legislation. So so in Australia, for example, when you're talking about having to do an operating and financial review, it actually specifically gives an exemption in very limited circumstances for that type of competitive disadvantage.
So one of the practical dangers for us then is that you have different national levels of exemption, and if we try and write something in that is potentially conflicts with those, we would create a barrier to adoption.
But I think you've at least got to acknowledge that there will be circumstances that might have to be addressed.
Okay.
Ryoko?
Thank you. So when looking at the page 12.7, so it said about the providing the to consider the internal information used.
The application yeah, yes. A little bit.
Sorry. When looking at the page 7, so it says about the providing the guidance about the internal information to be used by the company management. But sometimes I hear the core internal KPI or information they have internally is not provided on the annual report or other report, as it is from the view of competitiveness, they can't disclose to outside. But on the other hand, user, especially investor, want to know that is. So I think the information which is provided through new management commentary would help or would bridge between the information which can be possible to be disclosed by the company and the information which investors really want. So I think we have to think about this barrier, competitiveness idea between the view of competitiveness. So I think it is easy to say, but it will be difficult for the company to disclose that information. So when revising the new guidance or new practice statements, please think about the limitation of this point, please. Thank you.
Yes, and I guess one of the things that might be considered to address that would be to make it clear that you're considering your internal information in deciding what to disclose. You're not automatically disclosing information at the same level of detail and granularity as you're using to run the business. In fact, that probably wouldn't give you a concise report. So it's not meant to imply a sort of one-to-one disclosure mapping, but it is meant to say, if you have alarm bells going off in your internal reporting system, then that probably is an indication that you have something to report externally as well.
Liliana.
Thank you. What I'm wondering is if what we are saying here about completeness about management commentary will be impacting also the completeness in other areas. I mean, I come back with your example relating to the marketing channels, direct versus reseller. And if something like this happens in the real life, it's happening in a sound company is try to see what will be the impact, accounting impact, because if the internal reporting change, the management, the segment reporting should be changing at some point, or at least should be put it into question. So what I see or what I feel in, through that is that the completeness analysis that we are doing here from the standard setter standpoint related to management commentary could be impacting also the completeness analysis for other things. You understand what
yes,
I mean?
I do, and it is. We did consider some language to that effect, but I think it would complicate the management commentary to try and address the question of segmental reporting within the management commentary, because it's covered elsewhere. But if your management commentary is telling you your segments are wrong, then your segments are probably wrong.
But the auditors are obliged, at least in France, to do that, precisely to compare financial statement, management commentary, and they say in their report that it is coherent. They need to do that.
Yeah, no material misstatement is basically what we have to say. Yeah.
Jed?
I was struck by Trent's point that, you know, management segments and management commentary have to be absolutely aligned. There have been, I've come across a few companies where they have been misaligned, and you're right, it's a world of pain for everybody, because it's almost impossible to have a conversation with them if things are being run in a different way. And also, coming back to Larissa's point, it occurred to me about sort of loss of data. This focus on sort of what's material, you know, in period and prospectively as management think about what's going on in a business, I think is, it might lead you to discontinuities in data, whereas there must be, in any business model, some information that is fundamental to that business. And, you know, I don't know, pick an example, you know, Colgate makes toothpaste, they've probably got 80% market share in the UK, that market share probably hardly ever moves, and people brush their teeth just as often. So actually the data is probably incredibly stable, but you still want to know in detail what's happening to price and volume and channel mix and whatever else they're doing. You know, maybe it's pack sizes, trading up. So there's lots of data that is fundamental for us to understand, but it may not be in the top five or six data items every year, but it's totally fundamental to the business. And I think there's almost a thing that sort of, I'd almost subdivide it between fundamental drivers of the business, where management are going to monitor those KPIs every single time they meet, versus tactically important material issues, where they'll come in and then go out. And that, you know, for example, you know, water stress. You know, you might have a few years where you haven't had any rain and you're struggling with your aquifers. Then it rains a lot and suddenly, you know, water stress goes away. I'd expect it to come into the accounts and drop out again. So I don't know if I've made the point, but we need to differentiate somewhere in here about qualitative and quantitative, fundamental versus tactical.
And if I summarise that as being that there's a class of measures that are really just health indicators, and they're like the oil gauge on your car. You know it's there, it's always pointing in the middle, but you want it there in case it's got something to tell you that your engine's going wrong. So there's those types of measures which are sort of come back to the fundamentals of the business model, and then there's the, you know, what's strategically important on management's mind in terms of creating change or responding to change, and there's those measures separately, and maybe we should distinguish between the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Alessandro?
Thank you. I have some troubles making a distinction when reading this document between materiality and completeness, and this discussion helped clarifying that a bit. But I think still it would, the text itself would benefit from perhaps taking out the other indicators from the completeness section to the materiality part, as I would say all these three aspects, information used internally, external factors, and capital markets communication, are sources for assessing what is material information, as you say in the text. So perhaps it would be helpful to include this part into the guidance of materiality. And then completeness itself would make sense in terms of connectedness, because I could envisage a situation in which you present all the material information that you have identified, but you scatter it over the document, you don't connect it in any way, you're fine because you have presented all the material bits, but they're not telling a story. So I think the added value of this attribute of completeness is really to make sure that the issuer or the company tells a story throughout the document following the process that you have described here in slide 9. So I think if the completeness is intended in the sense of connectedness, I think it would be very helpful for the overall quality of the report.
And I think you're getting at some presentation points there, which is perhaps the other aspect of connectedness. So one is it helping you tell a complete story? But two is, can a user follow that story through the document? And perhaps in our keenness to emphasise the former, we've omitted the latter.
If I may, just one other point relating to this part. I think it is relevant also to have this connectedness idea also in terms of prominence, which will come later, I guess, in the discussion, because I could see that over time an issuer presents certain number of information to the market, putting the spotlight on different aspects. But then the annual report is the moment in which it brings all together all different streams and tells really the story. So I think this helps making what appears prominent over the year in different bits, making it part of a coherent story.
Thank you. Deepa.
Thank you. So another aspect I was thinking of relating to coherence and linkage, which was triggered by the discussions around the link between management information and external reporting, is whether through the guidance we could encourage companies to think about the reporting reflecting what's happening in the boardroom. And the best example I can use is risk reporting. So to what extent are these risks being discussed at the board level? And then, as Peter mentioned earlier, which one of those are the material risks for reporting rather than the reporting just being an add-on and disconnected from the other piece?
So explicitly saying, you know, what's been discussed in the board potentially needs to be taken into the management. Yeah.
Massimo.
Thank you. I will echo Liliana's last comment, in particular on the linkage and the coherence between management commentary and the notes of the primary financial reporting. I don't see this linkage here, but for instance, also in Italy, the auditors are performing some activities between the two documents. So I think it would be useful to so to say something about the linkage between the management commentary and the primary financial report.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. All right.
Shall we attempt a quick recap?
Yes.
So I think in terms of high takeaways, Madam Vice Chairman, it sounds like while there is an overall support for this coherence idea, I think one sort of clear message is that it's sort of not part of completeness necessarily. It's a different idea, and don't sort of bucket it together with completeness and materiality. So it's something different. It's like an additional concept. And it almost sounds like, again, going back to the distinction between what versus how, it's almost like material and complete is about what, whereas the whole coherence is more about how it's presented. Maybe there is a little bit of that flavor. So I think in terms of sort of key consistent messages that we've heard in that session, that's my main takeaway. I don't think I have anything to add to that.
Yeah, so I think we need to come back and reconsider the question of confidential information, yeah. But recognising that there's potential challenges with doing that. And also, just to carry the point on trend information over multi-year trend information into the next discussion. No, but I think those were the main points for me.
All right. So It's time for a break.
We can have a coffee.
Yeah. So let's break till 10 past. Matt, let's leave it to Matt.
Okay. So I think our plan, recognising that we've worked people quite hard today already, is we're going to combine the last two topic areas. So I'll cover neutrality first and then briefly other matters. And I can see people nodding their heads vigorously today. Yes, looking at you. Clearly quite keen that we should move towards wrapping things up. So we're on slide deck 4 still, and section on neutrality starting on pages 14, but in particular I want to highlight the proposed approach on page 17. So neutrality is another area where we have no explicit guidance at the moment for people to work on. It's an acknowledged area of concern raised in respect of other reporting frameworks, including our own. So something that we feel we need to address. We've set out an approach on page 17 that looks at 5 different considerations of materiality. So the question to you is going to be, have we got the right 5 considerations, or is there another better way of doing this? So I'll run you through the 5 considerations we picked up, and then I'll cover the other matters in the slide deck, and then we'll go back for a final set of questions and comments. So on slide 17, we've got firstly 2 aspects of neutrality that would apply to the management commentary as a whole, or indeed the management commentary and financial statements as a whole. So the first is around the overall tone and content, and that's the entity considers whether the management commentary as a whole provides a balanced view to support an assessment of the entity's prospects and stewardship. So the sort of issue we're thinking of here when we're trying to address this point is management commentaries that have a very upbeat sort of language, but when you get into the detail of the commentary, there's a lot of negative news, but it's just not reflected in the choice of language used. So I'm aware of some entities that will actually go through and do how many positive statements we make, how many negative statements we make. We're not suggesting going that far, but we are sort of recognising that as a potential issue here. So that's overall tone and content. Then the second overarching area is around the prominence, obscurity or omission of matters. So this is perhaps a potential danger with infographics. It's very easy, without changing the words in a management commentary, to change the emphasis simply by the way in which you apply presentation techniques, the way in which you potentially footnote bad news and highlight good news, or the converse. And also the omission of matters that are relevant to the management commentary. And obviously we've covered that in the context of providing a complete management commentary picture, but we're trying to pick up on the idea here that the omission of a collection of material, a collection of matters that in their own aren't significant, could collectively distort a user's interpretation of the management commentary. So that's the overall considerations. Then we pick up on 3 areas of detailed consideration that would apply in relation to an individual matter in the management commentary. Firstly, the selection and presentation of information. So the entity considers whether the choice and form of information presented on each matter could be expected to cause the user to take an unjustified view of the matter. So, for example, that might get to a water usage statistic that is applied across the business as a whole, when actually the issue applies to this one brewery on the edge of the Sahara. So there's a question over the selection of information. There is also question of neutrality in relation to the range of potential outcomes discussed. Now, sometimes that can be language such as we have a potential exploration opportunity which is worth up to X billion barrels. It's not saying it is worth X billion barrels, but it's implying there's a range that goes up that far. It could also be if, for example, you're discussing potential scenarios that the business faces and you select a range of scenarios that are either more broad than is appropriate or too narrow than is appropriate. And choices both ways there potentially affect how the management commentary gets interpreted. So we ask the entity to consider whether the range is unduly wide or unduly narrow. Then the last point we pick up on in relation to neutrality is consistency, and you might argue, well, shouldn't that belong under comparability? And a lot of these neutrality points actually sort of reflect the application of other principles to neutrality. But this is addressing the situation, for example, where the basis of preparation of a measure or the choice of measure is changed, and in making that change, which may be perfectly legitimate, that change obscures an important trend that a user would have picked up from the previous report. So consistency has a role to play here. That covers the approach to materiality, which is covered in A10 of the
neutrality.
Did I just say materiality? Right, neutrality is covered in section A10 of the illustrative drafting. I just want to highlight four other areas that the drafting also covers. One is in relation to aggregation of information, which we've touched on already. This is on slide on slide 20, where we just look at the different areas where aggregation of information could become an issue in the context of a management commentary. So perhaps the most obvious area is aggregation of performance information. You know, perhaps are you aggregating a trend on your supermarket chain with a trend on your convenience store chain. If you present the two sets of data together as one, then actually probably what you're going to get is a mixed variance where users actually want to see what's the business trend affecting the convenience stores, what's the business trend affecting the supermarket stores. So aggregation is relevant in the context of the level of performance indicators provided, the level of granularity provided. It can be relevant in the context of the description of the business model. So, for example, you have a feature of the business which is relevant to one growth sector. It's not big enough ordinarily to be worth describing in the business model as a whole, but because this trend is important to a key growth element of the business, it's potentially a material consideration. So you need to understand how the business model operates in that growth segment, how it's different to the rest of the group. And then lastly, in relation to aggregation, we've got the idea of aggregation in respect of the strategy of the business. Are you presenting a strategy at the right level of detail? Is it obscuring some aspects of the strategy or promoting other aspects of the strategy as a result of overgeneralizing how the business is approaching a particular issue? So that's aggregation. Then slide 22 picks up on the management commentary in relation to other information provided by the entity. And again, we've touched on, I think, both of these points in the discussion so far, but I think it's just worth coming back to them briefly. So firstly, how does the management commentary fit with other publicly available information? Should the management commentary be a complete set of the material information needed to tell the story of the business, or should it be allowed to cross-reference to external sources of information? And then we pick up on the point on public policy disclosures. So going right back to the start of today's discussion, the observation that they're addressing the needs of a particular set of users that don't necessarily overlap with public policy objectives, the need for disclosures there. I think I'd make the observation that sometimes the public policy disclosure is used as a substitute for disclosing user-relevant information. So that's something that we're looking to pick up on here, to recognise that actually sometimes users do need a different information set to what is required by legislation or regulation, even though it's in the same broad subject matter area. We pick up on assumed knowledge in relation to, on slide 23, that's the question of what level of knowledge can the preparer assume from users, and we set that out in terms of general good understanding of general business, rather than having specific understanding of the business model and the strategy and the circumstances of the entity itself. And then lastly, that takes me to slides 24 and 25, which cover comparability. I think the first observation I'd make there is there's potentially an inherent tension between the ability to compare information across the entities in the same sector and the need to provide information that addresses the specific circumstances of the entity. So that may be a tension that manifests in terms of the perhaps only a part of the entity being exposed to a particular issue, and therefore measures which are given for business as a whole across a sector, if you provide the information in aggregate form for the entity, then that information may be less useful than if you provide it in relation to the specific issue that the entity is facing. I also sort of note the calls for prescription in terms of reporting. We started today by saying we think we're principles based and we don't expect that to change. The danger with prescription is both that it creates a report that isn't concise because it's got information in it that's not needed to understand the circumstances of the entity. The danger is also that it creates the illusion that the report contains relevant information when actually the information needs to be adapted to address a specific point of concern. So that's why we've steered away from prescription as a means to address some of the challenges in relation to a management commentary. I think I'd also add that once you start on a prescriptive route, you are then into an area that says I need to not only prescribe across a very large range of different potential subject matter disclosures, but also prescribe disclosures across a very large range of specific circumstances that might affect an entity in relation to those subject matter areas. So it would be a frankly an enormous undertaking to approach in that manner. So we set out a proposed approach to comparability on slides 24 and 25 and in the appendix that looks firstly at the form and presentation of information provided, so taking account of other information provided by the entity, for example, investor presentations. If you're presenting a measure one way in your investor slide deck, then it would be odd if it was presented in a different way within the management commentary. Similarly, if you do have forecasts in the market, and remember, we're not anticipating that we'll require forecasts, but if you do have forecasts in the market, then are you presenting your performance historical performance information in a way that is consistent with those forecasts? Are you explaining how they're different? And then we asked preparers to consider the common definitions applied within their sectors and to the particular issues, not because they will always be right for the circumstances of the entity, but just recognising that if you can be comparable, it is desirable. And secondly, if you're not comparable, it is important that you explain how you're not comparable and why you've decided to provide a different basis of analysis. So we then cover disclosure of basis of preparation for measures in order to provide that transparency over what is in how a measure is being calculated. So scope, basis of preparation, assumptions underline the information provided. And then lastly, we pick up on the point regarding period to be covered, recognising that 2 years or 1 year of information, which is still very commonly the level of information provided in the management commentary, isn't always enough to see a trend, and five years potentially is something that should be considered, but won't always be the right period for every circumstance. So the idea is not to build a data book, but to build a set of information that provides users with the insight that they need on each matter.